Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Welcome back to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're talking about a company that is not quite listed yet, but should be listed fairly soon, and that is First Class Metals. And joining us is the CEO and director-to-be, Mark Sale. So hello, Mark. Welcome onto the Market Musings Podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for asking me on, Mark.
No, perfect. We're looking forward to getting the story. And I know we discussed before the podcast, there is a 3-month-old black Labrador puppy who is requesting attention. So he might make himself known at various points, but that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Kenny, and of course my co-host, how are you doing?
Yep, really good today, Mark. Great to have you on. Well, I've got two Marks actually, so yeah, interesting. I think we've had two Marks on before, but no, it's great to have you on, Mark. And obviously, I think you mentioned you had a bit of snow as well. Did you say where is it you're calling from today?
I'm in the Northern Highlands of Scotland.
All right, good, good. Whereabouts exactly?
I'm about an hour northwest of Inverness, right in the middle of the Northern Highlands.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, I'm in Scotland as well, in the west coast, and I've just come back from Macrahanish down in Cameltown for 4 days, and I've never seen wind like it. It was just unbelievable. It just seems to be keep going as well. I come home and it's still the same. So, yeah. But what we believe in this podcast is that you can have the best projects in the world, but if you don't have the right people behind those projects, then they're going nowhere. So absolutely. Really, this podcast is a chance for you to, you know, sort of tell us about, you know, it's like a potted history of Mark Sale, you know, where you grew up, what your education was like, you know, how you get involved in mining, geology, you know, and just give us the sort of story, you know, all the successes along the way and failures, because people have failures and sometimes you learn more from a failure than you do a success. So really, for the next 10, 15 minutes, Mark, it's the floor's yours to maybe just tell us a bit about yourself and ultimately your journey to First Class Metals.
Okay, well, I think we need to go back a wee bit then, because I'm trained as a geologist, but I took the leap from the geological arena into the C-suite, I think, as the Canadians call it. But that happened, I won't say by chance, but I was I studied at grammar school in Stratford-upon-Avon, William Shakespeare's school, as it turned out. And I was, through that, I was offered a scholarship to study overseas. And the two choices were Canada or Australia, but the people who had gone to Canada the year before had gone AWOL. So the Canadians weren't very keen on taking any more people. So I ended up in Perth, Western Australia. And that's where this story, shall we say, starts, in so much as I went to the university. I studied geology as my major, economic geology. And I was down to do an honours. David Groves, who some people might have heard of, is an amazing guy. It was the professor, and he was very keen for me to do honours. But I was offered a job before I took my final exam. So the honours went out the window, and I went into industry in Western Australia. And I started off with Anaconda looking for platinum group elements, and then quickly moved to Reynolds Metals, which at the time was the third biggest aluminium company in the world. But through a little bit of serendipity, they had discovered gold on their bauxite mine at Boddington. So they formed a gold arm, and I was one of the exploration geologists for them, and spent the next 9 years cutting my teeth in exploration geology in Western Australia. And anyone who's been to WA realizes it's a huge area. It really is. A lot of prospectivity. And I don't know whether it was in Australia that the expression "in the shadow of the headframe" was coined, but even now they're making discoveries in the headframe of gold mines that have been active or inactive for years and years and years. So it was an amazing experience for me. I don't regret one day of my time in Western Australia. But then I was offered a chance to go and do some recon in Papua New Guinea. And that was, it was quite hairy. I spent 2 months in New Guinea, basically had a blank check with a helicopter company, flew all over the place, met the locals who couldn't remember seeing white men in the past, but they said they had. And from that, I was catapulted into project management. And I managed a project at Mount Kare, which was a very, very contentious project near Porgera for a while. And when that came to an end, I was back in Sydney. And the guy said, well, look, thanks a lot for everything. We've got nothing else on the cards unless you feel like going to Argentina. I said, yes. So I went from Port Moresby to Sydney to Buenos Aires within the space of a week. I spent the next 15 years on and off in the Argentine. And I think the jewel in the crown of my experience in Argentina was I put the first hole into the Esquel gold deposit, which when we sold it to Meridian, had just shy of 4 million ounces on the books. Unfortunately, because of their approach, shall we say, to landowner and cultural affairs, that 4 million ounces is still set very safely in the ground. The success of that company led the directors to believe that they should start again. So we formed another company called Patagonia Gold, which I was a director of and technical director of that for them. And that leapfrogged into success too. And that was really hinged on the fact that I was the lead man in negotiating with Barrick Gold the purchase of their exploration portfolio in Santa Cruz, which wasn't easy, no mean feat, but we continued it. And I can always remember at the time, Sir John Craven, who was one of the directors, said that he'd been in his club in London and some of his chums had said to him, John, we see you've signed this multi-million dollar deal with Barrick Gold. They're the biggest gold producers in the world, or had the biggest inventory of gold in the world at the time. He says, why should we be so ecstatic and hanging out the bunting if the biggest gold company in the world is not interested in it? And he asked me this question at a board meeting one time. And I said, well, John, I said, how many ounces does Patagonia Gold have on the books? And he says, well, nothing at the moment, Mark. We're looking for you to do that. I said, so Barrick's cut off for a backing is 3 million ounces, clawback. I said, if we discovered 2 million ounces, do you think the shareholders would be disappointed? He said, absolutely not. We'd be ecstatic. I said, well, that's the point. It's all a scale of importance. 4 million ounces gets on their radar. 2 million ounces makes us ecstatic. And he understood then the concept of what is one man's meat is another man's treasure, shall we say, or adapting an old expression. So, yes, that was Patagonia Gold. And from Patagonia Gold, I went out into private consulting. And from there, I've worked for people in Africa, New Zealand, back to the Argentine, Canada. I was a director of Landor Resources in Canada for some time with Bill Humphreys, who was also associated with Patagonia Gold. I'm currently associated with another company in Guinea with some exciting prospects, as well as I'm the QP for a listed Canadian company with major assets in South America. So that's sort of where I'm at the moment. You ask about failures. I think the biggest failure I think I've made on a personal basis, Mark and Kenny, is that the fact I've made a lot of people a lot of money, and I've never had enough shares in anything to be worth a haircut. So I've been too focused on finding the next mine to be. Don't get me wrong, I've been paid along the way, and at times I've been paid handsomely, and I have been given options and the like. But yes, I've been too focused on making money for other people. So if that's a failing, then in some ways you can say it's a philanthropic failing, and I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Yeah, I suppose sometimes you're trapped inside the directorship as well. You know, the share price moves up, and you know the guys in the board can't really sell. Well, so that's half the problem as well.
You're exactly right, and I mean there was a situation with Patagonia Gold where the shares at one stage were worth 70 pence. I think they're currently worth 2p. But the board had an agreement that the exit strategy was for everyone, not for any one individual. And I think we all know what a bad sign it is if one of the directors or senior management of a company suddenly unloads a squillion shares just because the price is high. So, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, Kenny.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think you're alone in there, but I get your point. It must be frustrating. Obviously, the retail investors are free to buy and sell as they please.
As I say, if that's a failing, then I'll sleep with that one.
Yeah. So right, we've almost got you up to first class metals, but there's obviously a Scottish connection with you as well. Can you give us a bit of history and why you're in Scotland? Because I think there was a private company there as well you're involved with.
Green Ore Gold, and they've got projects in Aberdeenshire, Ayrshire, and Ross-shire, Gairloch. I'm no longer on their board. I only resigned early this year, to be honest. And that was because other things were taking over. And I said to the guys, look, no detriment to you guys. I said, love the prospects, love the locality, obviously. But I don't feel that I'm in a position to be able to give you the attention that you deserve. So I was with them for the last 5 years, I think. And they've got a JV with Koza Mining out of London, originally out of Turkey. And some very nice gold, a project in Ayrshire, in your area, Kenny, and also another gold one in Aberdeenshire, and what could be an interesting base metal project up in Gairloch. So, yeah, I helped them raise some money. I mean, when I said earlier I moved from the geological arena into the C-suite, what I also found I had a propensity for was sadistic as it might sound, was road shows and putting myself in front of people and raising money for projects. And I've only ever had one rule for raising money, and that is I have to believe in the project. And that's tantamount. I'll sit, stand, walk around or whatever till the proverbial cows come home and wax on about a project's merits, as long as I believe in it. And that is my personal, call it professionalism, rule of thumb. It's not just, oh, well, hold on, you raise us some money, we'll give you a consultancy in the background, or we'll give you a commission. No, if I raise some money, it's because I believe in it. And quite often when I have raised money for people, the people who put the money in have turned around and said, well, hold on, you're key to this. You're getting our money as long as you're in there still. So, I'm maybe going off tangent a bit, but that's just my personal ethics, that I have to believe in something for me to put my stamp on it, shall we say.
Yeah, definitely. Mark, sorry, I've been talking too much. I'm going to let you jump in.
No, I'm enjoying listening to you. Yeah, fascinating background there. I get what you're saying about not being able to sell as a director. I think that's always perhaps a frustration of directors of listed companies, a victim of their own success there. But But, you know, it's not a failure, obviously not, you know, if you've built a company and the shareholders have been rewarded for their faith and investment, then, you know, that's a success, isn't it? So, I can't have any problems with that. So does this then bring us up to date with where you are now?
Pretty much so, yes. Mm. I was approached by James and Ayub, who are the founding directors of First Class Metals. Mm-hmm. That they are incredibly dynamic people, but I hope they won't mind me saying this, they have only an interested exposure to the exploration industry. And it's that interest that gives them their enthusiasm, shall we say, but that technically they didn't have the exposure. So I'm not quite sure how they ended up with me, but they asked around, I believe, and my name was put to them, and they contacted me and said, would I be interested in assisting them? Initially, it was just, shall we say, mate's rate, shall we say. They sent me some project reports to look at and asked me if I thought they were worthwhile getting into. And I sort of gave them the thumbs up or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty adventurous in amassing what is an enviable land position in the Hemlo-Schreiber area last year and early this year. So, yes, they built, and this was all sweat equity by them. They were putting in their own money. That was the level of their belief and dedication to what First Class could be, was that they were prepared to put in their own time, their own money to buy these claims. And subsequent to that, they've gone through an IPO phase and raised money. Pre-IPO phase. They raised money pre-IPO, which is when they approached me and said, look, now we really need some help from you because we need a little bit of technical direction. We need to look at the claims and we need to do some work on them. So that's when they brought me in a little bit closer to the fold, shall we say. And as the relationship developed, it was a very casual relationship initially, as I said, but as the relationship developed and they said, right, we want to take this to IPO and we'd really like you to be involved at such stage as we list. So that's how it morphed, shall we say, Mark.
Yep. And of course, Mark, the Hemlo-Schreiber area seems to be a hotbed at the moment, especially for British companies. Of course, you've had Panther Metals in there for a few years. We have Power Metal Resources are in there. We've got you guys in there, and just probably 2 or 3 months behind is probably it's Fulcrum Metals there in there as well. So there is a core of British explorers, but it's not just British explorers. There's majors in there. You know, I think just next door to one of your projects, Palladium One, are hitting some decent intersections of nickel. You know, you've got Barrick Gold producing pretty brilliant. Close to you guys as well. I mean, it is a decent footprint that you have built up in a short period of time.
Well, a couple of things, if I may, Kenny, from that. You mentioned Power Metals, and I have an amazing amount of respect for Paul Johnson. I had fish supper with him, which is a Scottish expression that I'm sure you'll understand. Kenny, I had a fish supper with him in London a month or so ago. And as you're probably aware, Power Metals did a deal with First Class, and they had four very prospective properties in the Hemlo-Schreiber and further to the east slightly. And they have put those into the pot with First Class Metals. So I think that's a I think Power Metals is 10 projects in what as many or half as many countries around the world, an incredible portfolio, but they were happy to put their Hemlo-Schreiber claims into First Class Metals for a listing. So that was a big plus for us, a vote of confidence by somebody who's revered in the industry. It gave us some extra strings to our bow, shall we say, So that increased significantly, I think, our attraction to investors. And another point I would make is you mentioned Palladium One, which abuts us to the east, but it is on public account that we actually have a JV agreement with Palladium One on an eastern section of our main qualifying property, North Hemlow. And they have done a VTEM survey over our area and identified significant anomalies, and also followed that up with some quite interesting grab samples. So it really is a watch this space on that eastern area of the North Hemlow claim with Palladium One. And you also mentioned Panther. Mm. I mean, Panther have just put out some interesting releases on some of their drilling on their claim, which abuts us to the west. I mean, and Darren is, another amazing character who's just so full of, as the Australians would say, vim and vinegar, just a dynamo. And as I say, their claim is contiguous to us to the west. And I don't think it takes much interpretation to think that probably what they're looking at will continue eastward. I'll leave it at that. Otherwise, I might be leading the witness.
Yeah, maybe part of the same sort of greenstone.
And then, sorry to interrupt you there, Matt. And of course, adjoining our property to the south is Hemlow Explorers, and they've just done quite a big drill program. So, I mean, we're bounded by to the east by Palladium One, to the west by Panther, and to the south by Hemlow Explorers. So that North Hemlow property, which is only one of seven claim blocks that we hold, by the way, but yes, it is our qualifying property for the listing.
So you've assembled a portfolio of claims here, is that right? Just looking at the map on your website, there's a number of different project areas that you've assembled into the one package.
That's correct. I mean, as I say, the qualifying property is North Hemlow.
Okay.
That's the main one. There are seven blocks. There's a very large property to the east called Sugar Cube, which, again, abuts the Hart Gold Mine claim block. Hart Gold Mine is it's only a paltry plus million ounces compared to the Williams of Barrick at Hemlow, which is plus 20-odd million. But it puts us in good company, shall we say.
So this whole area then, it seems to be becoming quite interesting. I think if I get my history right, it was interesting, but something happened politically and a load of explorers left, but there's an awful lot of activity coming back to the area, but a lot of the projects are still underexplored, really. The whole area you could say is underexplored, is that right?
Oh, amazingly underexplored. And that's for, I think, a variety of reasons. And the Hemlow mine is on what they call, surprisingly, the Hemlow Shear. And there's a lot of controversy as to what sort of deposit Hemlow is, whether it's a failed VMS, whether it's a gold-rich VMS, whether it's stratiform, strata-bound, whether it's shear-hosted or what it is. That's by the by. The fact of the matter is it's on a shear. Mm-hmm. And interpretation shows there's possibly three sub-parallel shears to the north of Hemlow, one of which we believe could go through Essa, and the third one to the north is in the Hemlow Explorer stroke our North Hemlow property. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a lot of potential there, you're right, but if we go back to the Essa block has very, very little outcrop on it. It's either glacial till or it's muskeg bog. It's not a particularly exciting area to be on the grounds of it. And the analogy I've used in the past, which I'll come back to now, is that if you were a prospector in the way back when days and you had your panning dish and your mule and you were tracking across the outback of Ontario and you saw a hill in the distance, what would you do? You'd head towards that hill. You wouldn't stop on the muskeg. You wouldn't stop on the glacial till and think, I'll dig a hole here and see what's underneath. Of course you wouldn't. And that's why your point is very pertinent, Mark, in that it is underexplored, because when there was a lot of activity before modern methodology, it just wasn't on the radar.
Mm-hmm. And what about, can you give us a sense of what it's like on the ground? I mean, the more I read into this area and the people I talk to, to just fathom the scale is one thing, first of all. I think it's just such a huge area. But is there lots of activity sort of dotted around? You hear of these camps like the Hemlo Camp and the Timmins Camp. I don't know if I can, I'm trying to picture perhaps the what it's sort of like over there, the community. Can you help me with that?
Yes, I can by analogy.
Yeah.
You talk about these camps, and there is a lot of activity. In fact, you know, I've had to pull in the old boys network, shall we say, in order to get people to do work for us, because everyone who wants to work in the Hemlo Schreiber area has enough work. So it's incredibly hard to get technical people, to get contractors for magnetic surveys, etc. at the moment, because it's a frenzy of activity. But going back to your other point, it's such a huge area, you'll still spend a week in the bush and not see anyone.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's sort of this paradox.
Yeah.
It's frenetic, the activity in there, but because it's so big, yeah, it's all spread out, which is very similar to my experience in parts of Western Australia.
Yeah, that's kind of how I imagine. But I'm glad you said it that way. So when the listing is planned, isn't it, for, I don't want to set a date on it, but it's in the next few weeks, is it?
It is, yes. Yeah. We have what we believe is the final document in with the UCLA. We will get that back, and once we get that back, we'll put the dates in, and they have to come back to us 5 days afterwards, I believe, and say, you're good to go. So it's we believe it's imminent.
Okay. And where will the focus be then? Will it be in the North Hemlo area to begin with for you?
I have to say yes. And I have to say yes for a couple of reasons. One is because it's very prospective because of the neighbours that I've mentioned. Mm. And secondly, I'm on a bound to say yes because that is the qualifying property for the listing.
Yeah.
And I think, as you both appreciate, even if we think there's a lot of potential, as we do believe, on the other properties, it would be remiss of us to list on the basis of North Hemlo and then say, well, actually, the first place we're going to look at is Essa or Magical or McKellar, for example. Mm. So, yes, the focus will be on North Hemlo, and we already have Emerald Geological Services tied in to do the work for us as soon as possible after the snow clears. Having said that, I am also talking to a couple of companies to tie them in for high-resolution, low-altitude magnetic survey on some of our properties, and that's not dependent on the snow clearing.
Yeah.
So we've got this, I hope, conveyor belt, shall we say, approach to the exploration. We've already engaged two different people who have done quite exhaustive data reviews on some of the projects, because there's reports going back to, well, in some areas they go back 100 years, but the reliability of them isn't good. But I think in this Hemlo Schreiber area, from sort of 1980 onwards, when everyone was looking at Hemlo, that's when there was a plethora of activity in the area. So there's a lot of prospectors' reports, a lot of reports on the MDI site from 1980 onwards. So they're not georeferenced, so there's a little bit of rubber matting, but the important thing is there's a lot of historic information. And the last thing we want to do is spend money, obviously, repeating what's already been done. What we want to do is assess that information and use that as a vector for when we're actually out on the ground, initially going and looking at old showings that have geochemical anomalies, or in some cases magnetic or geophysical anomalies, and use that as the springboard as to how we start to assess these properties.
Mm, okay. Well, yes, that was my next question. Is there a plan ready to go? But it certainly sounds like there is, and it's that early sort of stage exploration, surveys, mapping, EM, that kind of thing. I mean, it sounds to me, I don't know about you, Kenny, it sounds like almost the early days of Panther Metals when they were doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, there is similarities between the two companies. I would say First Class are probably coming to market with a bigger portfolio than Panthers did. Panther did to begin with, but they came a different route. They came from the old Aquis exchange across to the main market from memory. Don't quote me in that. So it was a slightly different setup. But one question I've got, Mark, is you know, what kind of sort of figure are you guys looking to raise at IPO? Have you got a figure in mind?
We have, but I'd hate to be held to it. But I would like to think we will go into the IPO with enough funds to certainly satisfy the assessment criteria for all our properties for 18 months or longer. We are currently, sorry to slowly go off on a tangent, Kenny, but we are currently assessing which properties, North Hemlo being the main one, of course, that we want to apply for exploration permits. You need an exploration permit if you want to do invasive exploration. And invasive basically means if you want to cut lines, if you want to do trenching, stripping, and, of course, drilling. So we're at this stage, we're not being silly and looking for exploration permits for all of the seven blocks, but we're targeting three of them, which we want to do exploration permits on. And what you also have to remember in Canada is whilst, shall we say, reconnaissance exploration stops when the snow comes in November this year, drilling on many of the prospects actually starts when the snow comes and the ground is frozen. So we hope to have this rolling sort of exploration program, if that's the right sort of concept to get across, that during the summer exploration season, once we get the spring thaw, we'll be out there on the ground doing things, but the backup will be that we, well, not the backup, but the forward-looking plan will be that we have these exploration permits so we can progress that ground reconnaissance to trenching, stripping, and ultimately drilling in the possibly, hopefully this year.
Excellent. And I guess what's interesting as well is you'll probably be one of the last companies on the main market that got in under the old sort of rule structure. It must have been closed.
Oh, don't even tell me about that, Kenny. It was, I was at Mines of Money with James and Ayub, and it was the Thursday, what would it have been, the 2nd or 3rd of December? I can't remember what the date was. But, yeah, that announcement came out 10 o'clock in the morning saying, if you don't get your application to list in by 4 o'clock today, you have to have a market cap of, what is it, 30 million?
Yeah, and something like that.
We were due to submit it in the next days. And I think we probably got the best value for money out of our lawyers that anyone could hope for in that 6-8 hour period. Those guys were dragging their proverbials, getting that, not dragging as in being slow, but absolutely head down, bum up, working at it. And we did. We got it in at the 11th hour. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you now.
Yeah, no, definitely. Timing was perfect, so it was. I must admit, when I seen that announcement coming out, I did think about you guys because I knew you were in the process. So no, it's good that you've managed to get, stay within that bracket, and it just makes it an easier journey. No, I'm really looking forward to what you guys are going to be doing, because obviously, you know, it's almost like the British invasion at Hemlo. So obviously Panther's been there a few years, you know, Pouse came along and now JV'd their assets into you guys, and obviously there's Fulcrum in the background doing their thing as well, plus all the other majors that are in the area. So it's definitely a really interesting area to be in. What will be interesting as well is how much all the companies all sort of bounce off each other, you know, especially if you've got adjacent claims, and you know, if they hit a nice find and you're only, you know, 2 or 3 kilometers from that in the same trend, no, you're going to get a nice bounce in your share price as well. So it could work out extremely well, and it gives UK investors exposure to something different as well. So No, I'm looking forward to it, and I must admit I have put some of my hard earned cash into the pre-IPO as well. So
that's good to hear. I'm very enthused. I really am. Hoping to get out there as soon as it's sensible to go out there and see the properties once the snow clears.
Yeah. And of course, you guys have been pretty active on social media as well. I've seen a lot of videos and maps and stuff going out on Twitter. So the good thing is you get a lot of companies that come to, you know, the new IPO and nobody's ever heard of them. You know, they just get listed and you're like, well, who the hell are these guys? But you've been flying the flag for, you know, at least 6 or 7 months and socials and people know you're there and they know you're coming.
I have to doff my cap to James in that regard. He's a wizard as far as the Twitter and et cetera is concerned. He's enthusiastic and very competent. And you're right, he has been putting our profile out there.
Yeah, definitely. It's a necessary evil these days, so as because a lot of people they don't go to LSE for their news feed. They go to Twitter now, so you've got to, and LinkedIn to a certain extent as well. You've got to cover all the bases, and that's most of the retail guys are on Twitter or even Telegram as well now, which is another messaging app. So
I think we're on a bound. Within the regulations, obviously, to keep the investors informed. I mean, how many times do you hear, whether it's a plane delayed or whatever, the complaint is nobody told us what was going on. So you need to keep the people who've put their, as you said, Kenny, their hard-earned cash in, you need to give them feedback. You need to let them know that you're doing something, even if you don't necessarily have the results that they're hoping for, but let them know that you're out there actually doing something. You're proactive.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mark, I wonder if we should finish off with the 60-second challenge. I think that'd be quite good.
I think the 60-second challenge is very warranted here.
What's this 60-second challenge?
So Kenny always does, as you see. He sneaked it up on everyone. But effectively, it's I give you 60 seconds. So if you have a clock nearby or phone, keep an eye on it. And then it's 60 seconds effectively to make a bit of an elevator pitch, if you like, for the company and why people should consider investing. So you can take three reasons if you want, or just give us the elevator pitch. But effectively, it's 60 seconds to entice people to consider being a shareholder in the company. So, I mean, if you're up for that, then I can also time you as well.
Okay, well, I will try. I'm not sure I'll need 60 seconds, but I'll try and spin it out.
Okay. So in 3, 2, 1, off you go.
So why would I invest in First Class Metals? Quite simply, because the property holding they have is in the right area of the Hemlo-Schreiber Greenstone Belt camp. We have on our qualifying property, North Hemlo, significant success from our neighbours, Palladium One, Panther Metals, Hemlo Explorers. But whilst that is our qualifying property, the other properties, for example, we haven't even mentioned it yet, McKellar. McKellar has every element on the periodic table discovered on it, from rare earths to base metals to precious metals on it. Then we have the other properties that we've only scratched the surface of, so to speak, that have the potential because of their location, because they're near Generation Mining's zinc prospect or Sugar Cube next to Hart Gold Mines, that the geological situation we have just lends itself to there being other probable discoveries on our properties. You can take the newbieism, in other words, we're next door, or you can take the vector that the trends lend themselves onto us. But there's very little doubt in my mind that the properties that First Class Metals hold will yield significant exploration success. I'll hold back on saying a mine at this stage because it's early days, but I do believe that we are in the right geological scenario. were in the right stage of the expiration process for people to get in early doors. We have a good management team. And as you alluded to earlier on, Kenny, it's not just the project, it's the people. We have a significant amount of experience technically and corporately. And that's why I would be investing.
Okay. Good. Well, yeah, that was over a minute, but you know, I don't interrupt people when they're going through. I don't think it's fair. So it was 2 minutes 20 or 2 minutes 19 on my watch. But you know, that's it's a good pitch for the company. And as you said earlier, I think the key, well, not the key, but an important element would be to keep telling that story to the market as and when you develop things, and keep investors up to date on all the all the advancements that are going on and the work that's going on the ground. And it's a very good introduction to the company. That literally 50 minutes has flown by.
It certainly has.
It doesn't, yeah, normally it doesn't go as quick as that for me, but that really has flown by. And thank you very much for painting the picture there. All the best with the IPO, and I'll be keeping an eye on the company. And hopefully we'll be speaking again soon. And Kenny, unless you've got any final points, I'm pretty happy with what we've discussed today.
No, all good. No, it was a pleasure having you on, Mark. And as Mark says, we'll no doubt have you back on in due course. And we look forward to what the next 4 or 5 weeks brings. And hopefully we'll see. Do you still get to ring that bell as such at the LSC?
I believe so. Well, I think it's more of an LED situation now. It's not a bell, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, because I remember when Panther came to the main market, I don't know how the balcony held them all. I think every man and their dog was on that balcony, and brokers, you know, directors and friends and advisors. And I think it was like a bloody minibus that had turned up, or a double-decker bus, and they just piled up there. So it was good. It was good to see Darren and his team up there. And it's a nice thing to tell the grandkids, isn't it? Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that's when we get listed in the stock exchange. So
looking forward to it. And and I'm full of enthusiasm for the weeks, months, years of discovery ahead.
Excellent. All right, well, I appreciate your time, and we'll let you get back to snowy Scotland. And I've not looked out my window yet, but I don't think we're far behind getting some snow tonight. So
well, yeah. It must be quite deep out there, because the puppy hasn't ventured out the door.
Yeah, no, that was excellent, Mark. No, I really appreciate your time coming on today, and we look forward to having you back on. And hopefully, the next time you're on, you'll have rang that virtual bell at the LSE, and we can get down to business and tell us what's going on with the company.
Well, I appreciate your time, guys, and I look forward to our next chat. Thank you very much indeed for making the time and inviting me on.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Mark, for your time.
Yep. That's great.
Good luck. Thank Cheers. You. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.